dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me.
Hi, this is Alan Chartok. Folk music legend Joan Baez, along with the Indigo Girls, will take to the stage Sunday at 2:30 at Tanglewood's Koussevitzky Music Shed in Lenox, Massachusetts. Joan Baez has spent more than 50 years as a singer, songwriter, musician, and activist, and has played for millions of fans around the world. Baez, who grew up singing with her sisters and was an early standout at the Boston folk scene, is touring with the Indigo Girls, the latest tour in a musical partnership that dates back two decades. Joan Baez, I don't know what to say to you. Your bio is fantastic. You are fantastic. Aww. And all I can say is it's a great honor and a great pleasure to be talking to you. So,
thank you very much.
Joan, have you been at Tanglewood before?
Oh, many times.
And what are your impressions of the place? You know, it's just incredible.
When most people ask me that question, I don't remember because I've been around too many places for too long. But Tanglewood, I always remember. One of those exquisite places to go for all of us.
When we saw you, my wife and I, years ago up at Mass Mocha, your mom was there. She's passed since that time, hasn't she?
Yeah, a couple months ago, 2.5 months ago, but she... Her goal was apparently to reach 100, and she did, and she died 10 days later.
Wow, she reached 100. Well, those are good genes for you, aren't they?
I'm stuck with it. My father was 94.
Wow. Pete Seeger is giving us a concert here at WAMC. He's a very kind, as you know, wonderful man. And there he is, 95 years old, 94, 95 years old. He's just fabulous. You've had a long relationship with Pete over the years. He's been sort of a role model for you too, yes?
Well, he was the first, let me put it this way. When I was, I think, 13 or 14, and all I listened to was rhythm and blues, and my family was beginning to despair because they thought it was degenerate. My aunt took me to a Pete Seeger show. I guess I was 15 or 16, just, you know, it was like a good vaccine. Yeah. It took, and my family was already socially, politically conscious, so I was drawn to him on every level, so it was really a perfect starting point for me, because I admired everything about his career, and I was able to do my share. At the end of all those years, he was blacklisted.
Of course.
And I don't know if you know this story or not, but I guess ABC had a show called Hootenanny.
Yep.
And he had been banned from it for years.
Yeah.
And I said I would go on if they would have him back on, and they did.
Wow. You're the third one then. You, the Smothers Brothers, and Johnny Cash. And Johnny Cash was infuriated with their treatment of Pete and was among the first to do the right thing. And that's just so wonderful. I did an interview with Pete one time. I did several, but I did one, you know, in which he recounted those years, and they were very scary. I talked to Harold Leventhal once, his manager, and I did an hour with him, and he said to me, the only thing that Pete was ticked off about is that when they arrested him, he was only in jail for 4 hours.
I know all about that male pride stuff, you know.
That's really something.
You want to at least legitimize it by spending the night.
One of your first records was Hanging Around Harvard Square. I have a little band, not very good. But we have been playing so soon in the morning for, I don't even know if you remember it, for all of these years. And
folk singers on Harvard Square?
Yeah.
So soon in the morning, I'll never go astray. I'll hope and I'll trust and I'll watch through the night. So soon in the morning, when the dark clouds roll away,
I heard the voice of Jesus say,
come on to me.
You know, it's just been such an incredible career. I mean, what do you make of it? What do you make of the fact that you
the other night, I don't remember where I was, but this happens once in a while. I look at the audience, and I think, oh, my God, I've been doing this for 53 years.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then I'll say that to them, and I say the only thing that's crazier than that is that you're still coming to hear it.
Oh, yeah. Well, believe me, I know fawning is a bad thing during these interviews, but the fact that you have such legendary status and that your voice is as good now as it ever was. Do you do anything to keep it? Do you drink orange juice? I mean, what happens?
No, I do everything to keep it. It's an exhausting schedule. And when I do quit, it'll be because it's too exhausting. It's series of exercises and breathing, what you eat, and well, you know, you take care of yourself in every way. And but I think the actual vocal exercises, which I have to do, especially when I'm touring every day, they take a tremendous amount of concentration. And I think some of it maybe because for the when I started singing and for the first many years, I sang the opposite way from what if I'd been trained. All the instinctive stuff I did, I had to counteract by anti-instinctual lessons. So it is still an uphill battle. And that's for the high notes because the vocal cords are a muscle and they start to get weak. And like every other muscle in the body, you have to keep it, you know, toned or sure. It's not going to work for you.
I read your father was the co-inventor of the electron microscope. That fascinated me. Yeah, you know, here you are, world famous, but does it ever come down to the fact that somebody walks up to you and says, is it really true that your father invented the electron microscope?
They do. Every once in a while in an airport, someone will say, aren't you Al Bias's daughter? Oh, he loved those stories when I tell him that.
That's really great. So you knew Earl Scruggs, you know, you played with Earl Scruggs, one of my great heroes. What were your impressions of him?
I was crazy about him. He was so ridiculously shy, really, really shy. And he just played. I mean, he just played and sang. That's what he did. And so our way of greeting would be, I would say, hi. You know, we'd start playing Wildwood Flower. And he said, oh, no, that's the one I don't like so much. I'm going to play Wildwood Flower.
It was such a great crossover to folk music. When I understood that Lester Flatt, I talked to Louise, his wife, and she told me that Lester Flatt had said, what are you singing these folk songs, you know, for? But he had real progressive sort of roots and instincts, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
So what are you going to do with Tanglewood that we should know about?
Well, I have only two musicians. I have a percussion player, and I have a guy named Dirk Powell from Louisiana, and he plays seven instruments. Wow. So they're lined up on the stage, and he just switches from one to the next. And part of the time, the percussionist is with us, part of the time not, part of the time I'm on my own. And so the songs, I mean, you know, it's a half a century to choose from. Our job is to keep the evening fresh. And it almost doesn't matter what the song is, as long as the context is fresh and the arrangement. And that's, I think, what we're still doing. And some of the songs people have never heard before, and some of them they have, and some of the ones they came to hear in the first place, although, you know, not that many, because we really try to play the field. But the key is that they have to be something that'll keep the attention of the audience, even if they don't know it.
Dylan, of course, who nobody knows more about than you do, Dylan will sing a song, but completely differently than he had done before. Do you do that too?
No, I think that is, in my situation, I'll change an arrangement. I've been doing Barbary Allen for the first time and probably haven't sung it for 35 years.
He sent his servant to the town, to the place where she was dwelling, saying, you must come to my master dear, if your name be Barbary Allen.
So I dropped it, a bunch of notes, and just completely fell into this rhythmic. It has nothing to do with the way I sang it originally. So sometimes, it's just a different song, but it's the same song. I mean, it's the same traditional folk music from way back at the beginning of time. But he does more of that. I think he gets bored really fast.
Yeah.
So he just switches and changes. That's my guess anyway. I don't really know.
Do you feel the love coming from the audience?
Yes. I do, and I also feel it going back.
What's your technique when you're singing? Do you look into the eyes of the audience or not? Or do you find one person?
What's really interesting, I don't think I've ever answered this before. There are faces that, for whatever reason, keep going back to. Looking at them, I would remember maybe three or four of them. When there are kids in front, I'm always looking at the kids. When it's dark, I can't see anything. I'm just looking kind of straight ahead, or you'll see whatever light is out there. If there's a door light or something, it grabs your eye. Everything. And it changes by the evening if I'm feeling not as congenial or a little more withdrawn, then I don't look at people.
What's your relationship with the Indigo Girls? I mean, how does that work?
It's just wonderful. We haven't sung together in 10 years, and we just got together. It was like riding a bicycle. We had a 45-minute rehearsal, and we did four songs on the first night. And I really love them, and I think it's mutual. So both of us have admitted that our favorite part of the whole evening is when it comes to the end and we do four songs together. It just ignites. It's really fun and really sounds good.
Tell me about encores. When you're done singing and you say goodnight and everybody goes crazy, how do you decide what the encore should be?
The encores are the most standard of what we do. I mean, if I were a person who made hits, you know, like a Dylan or a Paul Simon, where I could grab any one of 15 songs and people would say, yes, you know, I know that one. But I don't have that background. So it's limited in the songs that fit that slot. So there's not that much variety there in choosing the encores. And what I usually do is, depending how long the concert's been, if I come back and do two songs in a row, if I'm really tired, I just make a gesture with my head on my hands, like, good night. With them, with the Indigos, neither of us does our own encore. We wait till the end, and then I nod and go off, and then they come and put all the microphones up, and we come and do our fourth song.
That's great. I see that you've recorded Motherland by one of our favorites,
yeah.
Natalie Merchant, who's been on our station many, many times and been very generous. So can you tell us something about what attracted you to the song?
No, I don't know how to answer that question ever.
Probably because it was a bad question, but go ahead.
No, it's not a bad question. Yeah. But the fact is that songs really do choose me.
Yeah.
Because I don't go out there looking for one thing or another. It either works or it doesn't. And in fact, it's usually my assistant who finds something or my manager finds something and they send it to me. And that was a natural.
Let me ask you this. Folk music used to be so political. Many of us of a certain age love it the way it was and wonder whether or not it will ever be that again.
It's a perfectly good question. And I think the problem facing us is that I came of age musically and politically in a 10-year period that will never be repeated. And it had to do with talent. It had to do with the politics, the political atmosphere. And so people keep trying to find that, and that won't happen again.
Mm.
But I was having a discussion last night with friends. We don't know how many good songs are being written, and there's simply not a stage for them. Because what happened to us was that we were a countercultural movement, but because of the perfect storm, we moved up into the culture, which means that it wasn't just, you know, teenage songs for teenagers. It was a John Lennon song, a Beatles song, a Dylan song, and from old people to professors and doctors and kids and little kids, and all listened to the same thing, and it had a certain kind of meaning. We don't have that now.
No, we don't. But what we do have is you. And we're very, very in awe of everything you've done, Joan Baez. And we'll all be there to see you at Sunday at 2:30 at Tanglewood's Koussevitzky Music Shed in Lenox, Massachusetts. And all I can say is, now I can retire.
maybe I will too. All right.
Now come on, shotgun bride. What makes me envy? Faceless, nameless, innocent and blameless and